And you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Off the Brawl on offtheball.com. We're going to look back at a tumultuous night for the UFC after Khabib Nurmagomedov submitted Conor McGregor to retain his lightweight title and cement his legacy as the number one at 155 in the division. However, he tarnished his reputation by jumping outside the cage and inciting a riot afterwards. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the show by Niall McGrath, who's back from Las Vegas. Niall, how are you?
Good, Simon. Not too bad. A little bit jet lag. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm just a little bit giddy because it feels like about 12 at night for me here because of the jet lag. But no, good. Listen, I'm looking forward to talking about some fights. Obviously, not the way we wanted the card to end, but very disappointed with that. But yeah, I'm sure we'll get to that in a bit.
Yeah, we will. I mean, the whole night was overshadowed by what happened after the main event. But I wanted to look back at some of the fights earlier on the night. And you identified Aspen Ladd's performance as something that stuck out from the prelims.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. Such a young fighter as well, someone I follow coming up through Invicta Fighting Championships. She's just been on a blitz, really, ever since she went into Invicta. Just so well-rounded for her age and such a humble, good personality. And to beat a person like Tonya Evinger, who's been in there with Chris Cyborg, who's been, you know, Invicta FC champion as well, it's absolutely fantastic. And her personality, I think, really comes across as well. She's a real example and role model, a lot along the lines of Michelle Waterson, who was also on the card with a fantastic performance against Felice Herrey. But in terms of Aspen, she's definitely a fighter I think we can look out for in the future. So well-rounded, as I said, anywhere she can bring the fight. So gritty, so determined. And as I said, to put away someone like Tonya Evinger in the manner in which she did just proves that we have a serious contender on our hands here.
Yeah, that win brings up to 7-0 now. I think a matchup with Kat Zingano could be a very good affair. What do you reckon?
There's plenty of matchups there. Kat really isn't on the best roll lately, but I'm sure she'll sit back, relax, and take a bit of time off. The weight cut has always been a big, big issue for Aspen as well. So that's something she needs to really address and consider what weight division she wants to be in. So for me, that's a little bit of a worry still, I think. You know, she was supposed to fight Jessica Eye. The fight fell out due to her having issues with her weight cut. So that's something that really needs to be addressed. She looked terrible on the scales, but obviously turned that around into a really, really good performance. So for me, there's a little bit of sort of decisions to make between her and her camp and what is the next move. And I think maybe just take a little bit of time off, address the weight cutting issue, and then maybe make a decision. But she's right up there in that division. So there's plenty of options in terms of fights.
Moving on to the main card, we kind of highlighted Michelle Waterson against Felice Herrig as a great way to open the card. I thought that was a super fight. There was 120 significant strikes landed between them in the three rounds. The fight went to the cage, to the middle, onto the ground. There was transitions all over the place. What did you think of that fight?
Yeah, it was a very good fight, you know, and I think some people were a bit aggrieved by the scorecards in the fight. But yeah, listen, for me, I thought Michelle did enough to win. I thought the pace was always going to be a big, big issue. And it certainly was in the fight. Michelle is just so quick everywhere she goes. She's probably the fastest woman in all of the divisions put together. And listen, as I said, you know, Felice Herrig, a really, really tough, grindy, gritty fighter. And Michelle's technical ability, I think, was just slightly the difference here. Her striking was good. Very quick off the back foot. Felice looks for that grindy, gritty style. And I just think the pace was a real issue for Felice Herrig trying to close the distance. And listen, fair play to Michelle. She's had a bit of a tough time since she's come into the UFC. You know, she hasn't really got a level of consistency going that we've seen her in Invicta Fighting Championships. But what a role model for women, for women's mixed martial arts, and a true pioneer of women's mixed martial arts as well. So listen, you can't gripe Michelle on that victory. You know, she joined us in the post-fight press conference afterwards, and you could see how much that victory meant to her, for her family, her husband, who's one of her primary coaches. And, fantastic result from Michelle Waterson.
Where do you think she should go next? I think possibly a rematch with Tisha Torres could get the juices going.
Yeah, there's plenty of options for her there as well. You know, I think, as I said there, I think it's about finding consistency for Michelle. And if we look at what Michelle can do, I think she's been very frustrated. And she said that in the post-fight press conference, that things she's doing in the gym haven't translated to what she's been able to do in the cage. So that's been very frustrating for her. And I think now, with the last two fights, obviously the win over Courtney Casey back in April, and the win on Saturday night against Felice Herrig, that, you know, she's put a slight bit of consistency together. She's going to look and try and move forward. Obviously, the Tisha Torres fight was disappointing for her. It's something definitely she could look at again. And you know, maybe it is, because Tisha's coming off a loss as well. So maybe it is something they can do and put together. Obviously, she wants to get back to that Rose Namajunas fight. She's not a long way off it in my eyes. So another one, couple of wins she can put together. She's right back in there. So again, as I said, there's plenty of options there. And that's definitely a fight I wouldn't mind seeing again, definitely.
Well, one of the official knockouts of the night was Derek Lewis against Volkov. I have to say I was quite disappointed with Lewis throughout until the last 20 seconds. I mean, he looked very slow. He was just waiting to land the big overhand right. Volkov controlled the fight from the off, and I'd say he must be fuming that he got knocked out there at the very end.
I think his balls were hot was probably the line he'd use. You know, absolutely hilarious stuff from Derek Lewis. And again, he joined us in the post-fight press conference and he said, "I look like a stoner." I don't know where he got that one from as well. But listen to me, Derek is a guy who has a lot of work still to do in his mixed martial arts game, has had a lot of back issues in the last number of fights and years. And I think that's something as well that he's addressed over the last year to try and do things in order to get some pain relief from that back, because that's been evident in a number of his fights, the back issues. But listen, Derek will be the first to admit it. And I think the exact line he said, you know, "I'm not a mixed martial artist, I'm a brawler." And I think that's evident in Derek's style. You know, he was under a lot of pressure in that fight. Took some big shots, looked out of it at one stage, came back. That's Derek Lewis for you. He's a brawler who has mass amount of heart. And I think, you know, his diet and everything in the build-up to the fight, there's areas in which he can improve on. You know, he openly admits that, you know, he loves chocolate. He loves, you know, chicken and all this stuff. He could do a lot more in terms of nutrition and obviously the tone of his body and his cardio as well. So I think if Derek pieces those things together and maybe takes his training a little bit more seriously, you know, we could have a serious guy here who could definitely give Daniel Cormier a big, big challenge. And, you know, that fight has been mentioned in the last day or two since his victory over Volkov. The UFC are exploring that idea of potentially having that fight at Madison Square Garden. So that's a really interesting one for me. And listen, how can you write off Derek Lewis in some of his fights? You know, the guy goes in there, first round or two, he starts very, very slowly. And somehow, you know, under the pressure that he's been in his last number of fights, he somehow comes back and finds a way to win a fight. And I think if you look at the fight against Volkov last Saturday, he didn't really look like winning the fight at any stage. And then he just comes up with the goods. It's, you know, it's spectacular stuff from Lewis. And a guy I just don't think you can rule out. And as I said, if he puts that training and nutrition and gets a little bit more serious in his approach, you could have a UFC world heavyweight champion in your hands right there. That power is insane.
I'd have to disagree with you on that one. I think Cormier would just manhandle him and wear him down. I mean, even going into the last 30 seconds of round three there, he'd only thrown 6 significant strikes compared to 25, and he just happened to land because Volkov got sloppy. I mean, his corner going into the round said, "You're 2 rounds down, the most important fight of your life, kill or be killed."
Yeah, well, you know, I think I expected Volkov to actually go through him, you know, myself, in the fight, my pre-fight prediction, and that certainly wasn't the case. And, you know, maybe it was the case in the first couple of rounds, but Derek Lewis finds a way to hang in there. And I think when you have that power and you have that one-punch knockout power that he has, you can never write a guy off like that. And in fairness to him, he's a lot of heart as well. So, listen, Daniel Cormier, if that fight does happen, will be very, very aware of the dangers of trying to slug out and throw down with Derek Lewis, because it could be a short night for Daniel as well. You know, I think it's an intriguing fight, and obviously there's not too many contenders in that UFC heavyweight division at the moment. So, you know, so I'd definitely watch. I'd have no problem watching that fight.
Oh, I'd definitely watch it. Don't get me wrong. Moving on to the next one, Reyes against OSP. I mean, Reyes came in as Joe Rogan said, he came in as a prospect and leaves as a contender. I thought he dominated that fight from the off, bar maybe the first minute when it was fairly even on the stand-up.
Yeah, I agree with you as well. You know, at one point maybe he was even knocked out, but it was, you know, OSP for me, he's a gatekeeper, nothing more. And I think in terms of the light heavyweight division, I think it's good to see someone like Dominic Reyes get that victory and kick on. You know, he's unbeaten, and I think we need more contenders like that. You know, you've seen his last 3-4 fights in the UFC, and he's just got solidly better. And the thing I like about this, the push hasn't been, you know, really hard from the UFC. They've steadily built up the push and progression. They haven't thrown him out to the wolves straight away. So that's good for me to see. They need to create contenders in this division, and Dominic Reyes is getting to that point now where he's going to be seriously considered in that top 5, top 6 bracket. and ultimately, you know, from his opinion, he'll look to be getting a title shot in the next year and a half. So no, listen, all good. I like to see contenders in the UFC light heavyweight division, because it's as I've always said, it's a division that needs stars and needs names, because it's a pretty shallow division in terms of the UFC.
Well, who do you reckon next? Gustafsson, Jimmy Manoa?
Yeah, someone like that. I'd like to see Jimmy Manoa potentially throw down with him. I think Gustafsson would be too much too soon. I'd love to see John Jones, Gustafsson next, part two of that fight. So Jimmy Manoa would be a good scrap for me. Give him a real test and defeat and see how that pans out.
And just in relation to the kind of bizarre finish, did you have it as a knockout or points, or what did you see?
Yeah, well, I think it was a knockout. I'd have to watch it back. I haven't watched the fights back, unfortunately, yet I haven't had the chance. But when initially watching, I thought it was a knockout, but strange the way it ended. Weird.
Yeah, I'd have to go with a knockout as well. I mean, the ref should have just said, yeah, he's down, he's out. He gave him 10 to get back up, and then there was a bit of confusion afterwards and nobody took ownership of the situation. But I would give him a knockout, which he got the win anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Moving on to the co-main event, one we kind of highlighted as possibly fight of the night. Now a fight of the year contender between Anthony Pettis and Tony Ferguson. What a brawl. I mean, what can you say? The two boys just went at it, and unfortunately, Anthony broke his hand hitting Tony in the head.
Yeah, it was a fantastic fight, start to finish. Two guys I love watching. I said this was the one to watch coming into fight week, and I think a lot of people dismissed Anthony Pettis and thought he was, going to be completely overrun by Tony Ferguson. Obviously, that wasn't the case. It was a back-and-forth brawl. Scintillating watching and obviously an unfortunate ending, but listen, I think Duke Rufus has to get a lot of credit for protecting his fighter in that situation. You could hear the words between rounds, between two and three. He said, Anthony, you can't defend yourself. You're not doing what I want you to do. This fight has to end. Broken hand. Sensible stuff, because he was so bloodied and beaten up. But listen, Tony Ferguson, again, a guy who's been overlooked. I've said this for quite some time. Overlooked, the UFC haven't been very good to him. Dana White hasn't said good things about him, even when he was UFC interim champion. And I think it's finally time the UFC gave this guy some respect. 11 wins in a row, new UFC lightweight record. This guy has to be next in line for me for the UFC lightweight championship, depending on what happens, obviously, with Habib. He's talked about the Conor McGregor fight. I asked him that question during the week. He said there was a bad offer. Conor turned it down. Didn't really, follow up. I tried to follow up at the press conference. Didn't give me too much answers, really. But you can understand where Tony's coming from and his reaction and his speech, and that it was basically, I wear the suits. These guys are copping me, all this sort of thing. So for me, I'd love to see Tony get that shot. I'm not so sure the UFC are going to lay that line. It might be the winner of Poirier-Diaz next for him. I'm not so sure what's going to happen. It's pretty tied up at the top of that division. But listen, how can you deny a guy like that? What do you think? I'm intrigued to hear what you think as well about that, because, another fantastic performance from Tony Ferguson.
I think Tony fought the fight that Conor should have fought against Khabib. He was light on his feet. He was in and out. There was no, I'm going to stand here and knock you out or try and walk you down. He was very smart about how he took the fight. I mean, Anthony Pettis came straight at him, and eventually he had him going backwards when Pettis was still fully fit before he broke his hand. I think Tony beats Khabib.
I agree with you after watching that performance. I was just about to say that to you. I think all the tools Tony possesses, including his wrestling, including how good he is off his back, that sort of reckless style of going forward with his striking. And he's a better technical striker than Habib as well. So I think if you piece all those elements together, I think, Tony Ferguson could potentially even go through Habib in devastating fashion. I think it's a fight the UFC have to consider making. And I know it's fallen out four times, but when you have a performance like that from Tony Ferguson yet again, I thought he was a little bit off it psychologically this week. Boy, did he prove me wrong. That was an absolutely phenomenal display from me against a tough guy in Anthony Pettis as well, who looked really, really good until he broke that hand. They have to look at this guy and really start taking him seriously. The UFC have taken the piss out of Tony Ferguson, in my opinion. I think, Dana, as I said there a couple of minutes ago, famously said when he was interim champion, when Tony made a suggestion that he has to be next in line, Dana White told him, who cares what he thinks? Basically dismissed him, even though he was holding that interim belt. So, it's time. It is Tony time. And I think We have to see that fight in the next, you know, 6 to 8 months, or a big fight for Tony, even a Conor McGregor. He deserves it now, and I think he even sort of reiterated that in the post-fight press conference. And if it's not now, I'm not really sure else what Tony has to do. It's just been an incredible run.
Yeah, I think, well, we're gonna see a bit of a shake-up because we're waiting on the outcome of the investigation from the Nevada State Athletic Commission in relation to Khabib. So the Ferguson-Khabib fight is cursed yet again from not happening, you know. Just in terms of Anthony Pettis, funnily enough, even though he lost the fight, his stock kind of rose.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think we've seen Anthony really look as good as we did in the first two rounds of that fight in some time. And I think maybe it's obviously the level of opposition he's gone up against there in Tony Ferguson. You know, Tony rocked on a couple of occasions, couldn't quite get the finish. But when you go into a fight like that and you against such a guy as Tony Ferguson and you put on such a display, obviously it was unfortunate the way it ended, but that's going to rise anyone's stock because Tony's, you know, 11 unbeaten. And I think it's the mentality of Anthony Pettis that people were so impressed with this week. He's cut out sort of, you know, the party style of his life. He's gone back to his roots, focused on his fighting. And that's a guy, if he can keep his mindset straight, can be right back up there in another couple of fights as well. Again, there's plenty of fights to make for Anthony Pettis. And definitely his stock has rose after that performance on Saturday night.
Yeah, I agree. It's a pity he's going to be out for at least 6 months, I'd say, getting that hand fixed. And who knows where the lay of the land will be by that stage. Let's talk about the main event now. And I want to put it to you. Did Conor McGregor's camp get the game plan wrong in this fight?
I'm not sure they got the game plan wrong. Maybe it was more of an implementation from Conor that was wrong. You know, I was very surprised when he came out and he threw a knee. I think it wasn't a kick very early on. Like, you don't do that against a guy like Khabib. And, you know, it was very surprising in that first round to see that. And even more surprising probably the second when he threw a front kick right at the start as well. You know, and then he just got butchered for the rest of the round. His stand-up looked sloppy. His cardio didn't look great, to be honest. I don't think Khabib's did either, you know, if I'm 100% honest about it. But I think, you know, looking back in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing. I think maybe, you know, if we had to do this all over again, Conor might have opted for a different fight, maybe to come back and get the juices flowing a little bit before that. I just thought it was an incredibly sloppy performance from Mr. McGregor, and I was disappointed. And obviously, Khabib looked really, really good, took full advantage. Possibly the fight could have been stopped in the second round, you know, and Conor was on the end of a barrage of shots from Khabib. But really disappointing. Striking looked off point, cardio looked off point. Very good job, in fairness, on the ground. I know, as I said, it could have been stopped, but he did defend it very, very well on numerous occasions. But I think the cardio sort of just ran out in that fourth round, and maybe he just didn't want to be in there. Maybe he didn't want to, you know, face another round of that. And when Khabib obviously had this sort of the face crank on, maybe Conor felt, you know, another 2 minutes on the clock, he's going to sink it in underneath my neck. Why do myself further damage? And I think, you know, in my opinion, the UFC are, because of the way the sport is at the moment, you know, that is the money fight again going forward, is a rematch after what happens, the unsavoury incidents. And it's very unfortunate for guys like Tony Ferguson, as I said there, but it's going to be interesting to see what the UFC do here and to see if the Nevada State Athletic Commission issue a suspension, which I think they have to. You know, I think there's something that we lack in mixed martial arts, and especially in relation to the UFC, is the lack of consistency. And that's a real issue for me. And I think it's something going forward that they are going to have to really address, because it's all over the place. You know, there shouldn't be one rule for one fighter and then a different rule for other fighters. It's very, very worrying. I think the UFC need to step up. The Nevada State Athletics Commission need to step up and really come down strong on Khabib here.
We'll get to that in a second. I want to go back to the fight again. Khabib didn't seem worried about Conor's stand-up at all. He took any shots that were given. And if anything, Khabib landed the biggest shot of the night with the overhand right, which sent McGregor spiralling back. That was the biggest shock for me.
I think, again, Conor's defence was sloppy. Maybe he was saying the cardio as well. His hands were dropped a lot lower than we've seen. There was no real oomph in his combinations that he was trying to put together as well. I just think it was, and I'm not trying to make excuses for Conor, but I think it was, you know, ring rust is a real thing. And I've always said this, and there was always a slight worry coming into the fight, was the ring rust element. And, you know, obviously very different from boxing. Maybe he just didn't mesh everything together and maybe did need a, you know, sort of a tune-up fight before he came back for a world title shot. And that seemed to be very much the case. It was just sloppy. It was lethargic. There was no real thought behind it. And I think that's a major concern because Conor obviously is very cerebral when it comes to his striking. You know, there was a lot of sloppy shots thrown there and his defense was very poor as well. And I think, you know, kudos for Khabib for catching him. But, you know, at the end of the day, if that's, you know, if Conor is on full tune, on full flow, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to stand like that. And it was just very poor, very sloppy from Conor.
I mean, obviously he called for an immediate rematch like he did against the Diaz fight. But the thing about the Diaz fight in the first one, like he dominated the first round, was quite clearly the better MMA fighter. Yeah. And it was just a case of his gas tank went. And he said afterwards, I need to make the adjustment. He did. He had a game plan in the second one. In this fight, you know, he didn't, you know, he won the third round just about. But there's nothing from that fight that tells me that he can go and beat Khabib in the rematch.
Yeah, no, there's, you know, for me, I don't want to see a rematch, definitely not straight off the bat. You know, whether the UFC want to do it or not, it's a different thing. You know, they obviously love the money, love the, you know, the big paychecks and the big advertising, sponsorship, everything that comes with that big fight. But I think there's other fights that Conor needs to maybe look at before even considering a Khabib fight. You've the winner of Poirier Diaz as well. You know, there's lots of options there with that. I would personally like to see him, you know, maybe do Diaz 3 before potentially looking at a Khabib fight or Tony Ferguson. But the worry for me about Tony Ferguson is that Tony would beat him in terms of Conor's reputation and what he wants to do to get back to that lightweight title situation. I thought Tony looked phenomenal. You know, there's other scraps. You've potentially Justin Gaethje. You know, I don't really like a lot of those fights for Conor after the performance on Saturday night, to be honest with you. But I think there's a lot of work to be done and it's going to be very interesting to see what he does. So, you know, it's all sort of in the air at the moment. I think we need another week to, you know, maybe let things calm down. But, you know, a rematch for me at the moment, I think we're looking at the same outcome as we saw on Saturday. Because I think there's a lot more work for Conor McGregor to go in there and do in the gym. But, you know, saying that as well, it could be a massive eye-opener for Conor. Maybe it's the thing he needed. Maybe he needed that sense of taste of defeat again and to really focus him and reinvigorate him, you know, into the realms of this new six-fight deal. So, you know, fascinating times again in the lightweight division. I think there's so many fights we can make. So I just think it will be a period of reflection for Team McGregor at the moment.
Do you think he's at a crossroads now? I mean, could Khabib haunt his MMA career for the rest of his time in the UFC?
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, if you know, maybe Conor doesn't really want it anymore. That was sort of the big question coming into this week. I think potentially signing that six-fight deal has showed that he wants it, but maybe he was just a little bit off in terms of how long he took this fight on. I think it was 10 weeks' notice they took it on. You know, for me, not fighting in 2 years in the octagon, it was a short period of time. And I'm not making excuses for him here. I'm just calling on how I see it. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting, I think, going forward and the next decision from Team McGregor and what they're going to do. I think they should avoid the rematch at all costs at the moment. I think there's other money fights there to be made if they want to go down the line of money. But in terms of, you know, cementing his legacy, I think he really does need to come back in the next year or two and fight Khabib. And if he can put, you know, together in his next fight a really good performance and then ultimately go on and challenge Khabib again, you know, that's going to look to me as if he really wants to make a progression and gain back that title. It may well be the thing that Conor McGregor needs. Really, I really do feel that. I think it might be the reinvigorating moment for Conor in his career that will spur him on to potential greatness in the UFC. But, you know, the UFC have a cash cow now in Khabib Nurmagomedov, so it's going to be interesting the way the UFC approach this in terms of how they're going to market Khabib and sell Khabib. I just think the acts at the end of the fight were, you know, ludicrous. He could have really strutted across that octagon and, you know, made himself a world star. But I think, you know, the actions of what happened are really going to sort of tarnish Khabib going forward. But in terms of Conor, yeah, there's lots of options and it's going to be very interesting to see what's next. And I think we're going to learn a lot in the coming months to see what fight he takes and what fight's offered by the UFC.
Yeah, I think Khabib really tarnished his reputation in the moments after what happened. He could have stood there with the belt, rubbed it in his face, said he was going to haunt him. He said, could have said, if you go up to welterweight, I'm going to follow you up there. You're never going to win another title while I'm here. If we fight again, I'm going to snap your arm. And instead, he jumps over the cage, causes carnage in the octagon and in the arena. You know, his teammates jump in. McGregor's hit from behind, cowardly from behind. and now those guys won't be fighting in the UFC again. I mean, look, you spoke to Garrett A. Davies and Dennis from Submission Radio, and this is what they had to say in the aftermath of the event.
Australia. Dennis, first of all, with you, obviously horrific scenes here tonight in Las Vegas, Nevada. Yeah. Just your thought off the bat.
I just think it was a great moment. I think this was a fantastic event, but the fact is, I was walking around the arena just before, and there's just a sad feeling in the room. The event, in a lot of ways, has been ruined for me. I just think it's taken over the fact that it was a fantastic performance by Khabib. We were at the front. We saw the Khabib supporters, the way they were acting and what was going at the front. It was not something that people should want to experience. There were interactions with police officers. There was just a lot of bad vibe in the air. And I know that in the room right now, in the media room, a lot of people are quiet. A lot of people are disappointed. I think it went from being one of the greatest moments in combat history to one of the darkest moments in combat history. And I think people were looking for some sort of, I suppose, support, some kind of word of wisdom from Dana and the UFC to sort of make us feel better, to make us feel like something is being done. And Conor didn't press any charges. It just kind of seems like nothing was done. No one put their foot down on anything. And everyone sort of got away with whatever happened. So that's just how I feel at the moment.
Garrett, you know...
Yeah, I agree with you.
I want to ask you, obviously, you know, the UFC brought out Khabib tonight. Was that the right thing to do, especially after the comments he made?
What, brought him in?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely right to bring him in. I'm glad we saw him. He did make a fulsome apology, explained why it boiled over. I think for a long time, well, what is it, 7 months or 6 months this has simmered. And these are two... You know, this group of men from Dagestan, 7 years ago, Dagestan was the most dangerous country in the world, okay? There was a war going on there. They've grown up with a backdrop of that, and war talk from Conor, I think, is incendiary for them. I think it's very difficult. There's a line with building up a fight, insulting people, and stepping over it. And I think two cultures clashed here and they didn't understand each other, and this was it boiling over afterwards, after the job was done. It really showed what the difference is between a fight sport, a mixed martial arts sport that we love, and violence, street violence, basically gang street violence. It's terrible. I concur with you completely. It's a real black eye for the sport. It's a double black eye. You know, it's a broken orbital socket for the sport with so many people watching. It will blow over because it always does. I think even though the UFC couldn't do much about it, I think the Nevada state will do something about it. It wouldn't surprise me to see Khabib get stripped or get a suspension, certainly in Nevada, which will be upheld in other places. But it's such a shame for what was a fantastic build-up, a fantastic global international event. Australia, yeah. Ireland, the UK, Americans, Canadians, Japanese, Brazilians, they're all here, and it's such a shame.
And we look back to the John Malkovich build-up video that we saw on Twitter, yeah. And how everybody sort of got behind it and said, you don't need to talk about a bus incident or two nations to sell a fight like this. When John was talking about these two fighters, he was talking about the best of the best fighting each other and seeing who the greatest person is. You don't always have to use fight footage or two nationalities making fun of their religion to sell a fight. I absolutely disagree with it. I think fans are getting sick of it. I think the UFC need to have a good think about their promotional methods, and I think that things can be learned from this situation.
I agree, and also I felt, sorry, excuse me now, I also felt, just while it's in my head because I'm so tired, I may forget what I was going to say. Or did I forget? No, I didn't. It was a genuine question that I asked Dana about trying to arbitrate between the two teams. There are always ways of doing peace talks.
Yeah.
And hopefully that is the end of it now, because we don't want the next repercussion. I cannot see how, is it Tugumov?
Tugov
and Artem Lobov now fight.
That fight's going to be off. Apparently he was one of the guys that was...
I can't see that happening.
That was pulled back by the police, so that's not going to happen. Artem Lobov's fight is off yet again. But the thing for me, you know, and, you know, as a mixed martial artist, as a guy who gets in the cage, has responsibilities to uphold the sport and represent the sport, we can't condone those actions tonight from Khabib Nurmagomedov. Something really has to be done. And the thing I'm very frustrated about, and especially from coming from Ireland and being back home there, we have a constant battle to defend the sport there. And I think everyone worldwide now, everyone in this room, you could feel the tone. It was dark. It was probably the darkest day in mixed martial arts history on a world stage because of the audience as well. We're all going to have to defend the sport again. And can we after that?
It's a tough one because leading into this fight, I saw ESPN ran with the Ali comments and focused on the allegations behind him. So it was already a rough start for a lot of casual fans who don't really know much about what was going on. And then on top of that, this happens. It's going to take some time. I mean, it's hard for sponsors. The sponsors that sponsor our show, the programs that put on our programs, the websites that put on our articles, the families that wanted to watch. I mean, for God's sake, I was in the UFC shop. There were some kids' Conor McGregor t-shirts. Mm. There is a lot to be said for this. It is a professional sport. There is no excuse for a man to jump over a cage and attack another man, no matter what he says. We are all adults here, and there's a line to be drawn. I remember when strike force happened, Dana had a lot of harsh words to say. Well, this is 20 times worse than strike force.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. We saw the dark underbelly, I think, tonight of what fight sports can be when it goes wrong, when the line is stepped over. And and look, it will blow over. It always will. I mean, I've covered boxing where there've been real mass brawls at ringside, and it's so frightening to be in it. And I mean, I was up in the gods on the ledge covering it tonight, and you could see it all kind of happening below you. And it looked like mayhem. I was literally looking right down on it. I do believe, Dana White, that they did the utmost, because I think through the week they did a brilliant job of keeping the teams, the crews apart. But this can't be allowed to happen again. It
shouldn't be supported or used for promotion.
But also, but I've got to say, I want to see Conor calm his act down. I, you know, the dolly in New York began it all. There was no need to do
I said that today.
There was no need to do that. And there was never any real comeback. And you saw Khabib this whole period. He's not... He was like a pressure cooker. Mm. And it eventually burst over today. He said he's going to get a proper drubbing down from his father. I'm sure he will.
And deservedly so.
Yeah, and I mean, Vladimir Putin calling him up, congratulating him. I mean, this is a man who is an idol to a country. There is a way to act. I believe we haven't spoken to Conor McGregor yet, but him dropping the charges, it seems like he's just upset about his performance in the cage tonight.
No, but I think dropping the charges I think Conor's a great marketeer. I mean, let's rewind like 24 hours. He's a brilliant marketeer. I hope he learns from this. He doesn't have to listen to me. You know, I'm an old bloke to him. I'm his father's age. But there's a line you can't step over. Sport is not about religion, insulting people's religion or insulting people's countries or calling people terrorists. It's got nothing to do with the sport.
It's entertainment.
It's a fight in a steel cage and sports entertainment on a Saturday night.
And you need to get away from those things, with everything that's happening right now, worldwide, Australia, America, everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't want this to happen in the sport. No. We want to watch two guys compete, find out who the best was. And that's what happened tonight.
Because
before
Conor's
all this
a hero for so many people. He captured the zeitgeist for a generation. He's a brilliant character. I thought, by the way, he was off it tonight. I thought there was ring rust there. Yeah. I thought he didn't look sharp. The timing wasn't
very sloppy.
He barely put a dent in Khabib. And Khabib was actually quite happy to stand with him as well in that third round, I think it was. Quite happy to stand with him because Conor wasn't quite there with it. Because, you know, we haven't discussed at all anyone tonight. What happens to Conor next, you know?
And that was Gareth A. Davies and Dennis from Submission Radio talking to Niall in the wake of the riot at UFC 229. And I think Gareth A. Davies hitting some very salient points in relation to geopolitical offences. I mean, if somebody stoked the flames of what goes on in Northern Ireland, you know, we wouldn't be too happy about it. And what was your take on it, Niall?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with what Gareth said there to me and Dennis. But, you know, at the end of the day, as I said a number of weeks ago, and I got a lot of criticism, to be honest, on YouTube for, you know, overplaying the dark element of this fight. And, you know, it was obviously a surprise and a shock what went on in the aftermath of the fight. You know, I think Conor was on the verge of crossing the line. I don't think he actually crossed the line, in fairness, in the build-up to it. You know, Khabib said some unsavory things about, you know, the Irish in the workout as well. There was, you know, about the whole language issue and Conor McGregor's grandfather. So, you know, all the trash talk puts eyes on the sport. This is what I want to get across. Once the eyes are on the sport, that's probably all that matters. And if guys don't see this as trash talk in a build up to a fight, you know, get yourself together, because you can't be doing things like what we saw in the aftermath of that fight. I think it was absolutely disgraceful look for the sport. It was pathetic, you know, and in relation to me and to maybe like PT Carroll, the likes of the guys here in Ireland, the one question we always have to answer or try and answer is defend the actions of incidents like that. And I know they're few and far between, but it just doesn't help. When the world's eyes are on UFC 229 and we have an incident like that, there's no way you can condone Habib's behaviour. I thought it was a disgrace from the UFC for actually giving him a platform after the fight to go and speak as well. You know, just unbelievable. And I think, you know, putting spectators' safety in jeopardy was the main issue for me. I thought it was absolutely horrific. It obviously ensued a few issues after the fight amongst the fans as well. I didn't see it. And I want to put a point across as well during the week from a lot of the videos we did see online of fights and brawls. A huge amount of Americans were dressed in Russian gear and Irish gear. So, you know, were they actually people from Ireland? I'm not so sure, because there was so few compared to maybe the Mendes and the Aldo fights, Irish actually in the arena, that, you know, I don't think we can tar them with that brush that they were brawling. Because as I said, there was, you know, you go back to the press conference, you go back to the weigh-ins, a huge, as I said, amount of Americans were in Russian and Irish attire.
Well, just to follow up on that, I actually got in touch with the Las Vegas Police Department yesterday, and they just issued the statement saying they helped break up a few scuffles, no charges were pressed. I followed up then saying I was specifically asking to incidents involving fans outside the arena, and they didn't get back to me. So, you know, I don't think there's too much to read into that. I saw one video, but it was the same video from five or six different angles about one guy getting knocked out. But other than that, they seemed pretty tame.
Yeah, you know, it was obviously unfortunate, the incidents that did happen after the fight. But yeah, as you know, I think there was even the lads, you know, Tugahov, who's supposed to be fighting Artem Lobov, that he's obviously never going to fight in the UFC again, according to Dana White. The lads were just, they were detained. They weren't even obviously fully arrested because Conor didn't want to press charges. And I think, you know, fair play on Conor. It's just, you know, sort of leave it there in what happens. And, you know, I publicly slated Conor McGregor after Brooklyn, and I'm going to publicly slate Habib Nurmagomedov because it was pathetic. You know, the whole incident was just totally unsavory, and being on such a stage that it was on as well, it's detrimental to the coverage of this sport in Ireland and across the world. And, you know, the whole feeling in the media room was of total and utter disappointment. It's damaging the sport's credibility. You know, after all the incidents that we've had over the last few months, and, you know, listen, a large portion of them were involving Conor McGregor. And I just, I'm just pretty disgusted. And another thing I want to say as well in relation to that is, you know, a large portion of the MMA community and prominent guys in the MMA community, and I've noticed over the last 24 to 48 hours, have more or less been condoning this incident. And I think that's absolutely pathetic. And I think it's something they really have to look at themselves in the mirror. You know, they're coming across as absolute fools by going anywhere near condoning the actions of Habib Nurmagomedov, because it was, you know, appalling and pathetic, as I've said. So that was another real disappointment for me. But I also got caught up with John Morgan from USA Today and MMAJunkie.com to get his thoughts. He's obviously a Las Vegas resident as well, and to feel what it's like around there, and maybe ask him some of the legal ramifications that may face Habib and what the UFC should do.
John Morgan from USA Today and MMAJunkie.com. John, obviously just want to get your reaction to tonight's scenes. Chaos here in Las Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena. Off the bat, what's your feelings of the whole incident?
Sad, I guess I'd say. You know, it's one of the wildest things we've definitely ever seen, and it's unfortunate. I guess maybe, probably, I mean, I don't want to say you could have anticipated it. I mean, I don't think you ever see that happening, but I think we all realize going into this just how heated this rivalry was, and not just between the two combatants, but between the whole team. But it sucks, you know what I mean? Because it puts a damper on what was an otherwise great evening. You know, a big night for the sport, ended up being a great card, but ends in terrible fashion. And you know, Habib Nurmagomedov should be able to become a superstar after something like this. I mean, you beat Conor McGregor the way he did tonight. I don't think he's going to be able to really truly capitalize on what he accomplished this evening. So it's just unfortunate overall.
Can you tell me, obviously, from an American point of view and the American law here, what would have happened to the three fighters from Habib's camp that were reprimanded and taken into custody? You know, would there be charges pending against them, against, you know, public safety? Or, you know, what is the situation there?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm certainly no legal expert, so I won't pretend to know the ins and outs 100%. But, I mean, I think you can see that what was there was criminal. I mean, that is not something that happens within the confines of a sporting event. You know, this is not, you know, an injury occurred because of an extremely rough football hit or something like that. You know, I mean, this is somebody jumping into a realm of combat that they shouldn't be in. So, yeah, I think there's definitely some real opportunity for charges. In the same way that Conor McGregor faced real legal charges after the incident in Brooklyn, I think he'd be the number one Manoff and his team, they're going to face real legal charges as well. Now, you know, how that all works out, we'll see. Obviously, the commission is going to have their say as well. But, yeah, it's definitely not a free pass.
Where did the commission go from here with this incident? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. There's you know, certain things they can do in ways of, you know, not licensing for the future. They can certainly fine, you know. They made it aware this evening that they're withholding Habib first for the time being. They can certainly take some financial hits off that. But, you know, obviously there's nothing they can do in terms of relation to criminal stuff. That'll all happen separately. But they can certainly sanction him for fighting. And, of course, you know, Nevada is one of the strongest commissions in the sport, and a lot of the other commissions kind of copy what they do. So if Nevada says, listen, we're not going to allow you to fight here, we're not going to license you, certainly other states could follow suit.
Should the UFC have done more? Off the bat, we saw the whole, you know, Paul Daly, Josh Koscheck incident. I think it was Jason High as well.
I think what it needs to be is consistency. You know, that's it. You know, you mentioned incidents, and it seems like everything is on a case-by-case basis, which I'm sure is natural. But, you know, it just seems like there has to be some kind of precedent set, you know. And you know, I don't know necessarily what the UFC can do. I mean, they took a lot of steps tonight, man. There were police everywhere. There was added barriers everywhere. I mean, there was obviously steps in place to prevent what happened, and it still happened. So, you know, I don't know what they can do. But, yeah, I think, listen, you know, after the April incident, you know, with Conor, you know, the UFC said, listen, we'll wait to see how the legal system plays out, and then we'll make our move. And then they didn't make any moves, you know what I mean? So it'll be interesting to see if that differs here, you know. I mean, I would like to see them take a harsher stance in situations like this. You know, I don't know exactly what you can do. These are independent contractors, you know. There's only so many things you can do. But, you know, it seemed like after the legal things went away with Conor this spring, then the UFC just never followed suit. I'd love to see him maybe take a stronger stance moving forward. I don't know if you can do it here if you didn't do anything to Conor. I don't know how you can do something to Habib and call that consistency, but, you know, maybe it's an eye-opening moment for the UFC.
John, I appreciate the time on a dark night for Mixed Martial Arts.
No worries.
And that was John Morgan from USA Today and MMAJunkie.com. John's a good guy, known John for many a year. Yeah, no, interesting stuff from John there, obviously trying to get sort of a line on what may happen in Nevada there in relation to the police. Obviously, it's all up in the air at the moment, but, you know, Habib may possibly face, you know, charges in relation to putting the public safety at risk. Obviously, Nevada said it led a commission of hell is purse still. And we got a statement last night from the commission that read, they're not making any further comments and they're withholding Habib's purse until a full investigation is complete. And I think John is along the lines that he could be facing a lengthy ban. And I think the word there and the word that I liked was consistency. The UFC have to show more consistency. They have to really, you know, create a level playing field in terms of these incidents. And, you know, it can't be, you know, one thing for one person, one thing for another, as I've said. They need to really clamp down on this kind of behavior. And, you know, it, to a large portion, the promotion of this fight and the way everything went down was their fault as well. You know, they're the one who used the Dolly incident. Not that it was surprising to me, but that obviously puts sparks in flames in the fire. So that really didn't help either. And I think maybe there might be sort of a period now the UFC look at how they actually promote fights, because totally unsavory, as I said. But, you know, I do hope the Nevada State Athletic Commission come down strong on Habib and set a precedent, because it was disgusting and utterly just a bad look for the sport, man. Very disappointed for me still. It was a very emotional night. It really was, you know, from everyone in the media room. So
I think just following on from that, I mean, it was MMA's biggest night, and, you know, the media had their chance to say, oh, well, look, MMA is a joke, this kind of stuff happens. But a similar incident happened in 2006 between Floyd Mayweather and Zab Judah, and Zab Judah threw a below-the-belt shot and Roger Mayweather jumped into the ring and there was a riot in the ring. But funny enough, that was mid-fight. The fight, everything calmed down and the fight went on. So this thing does happen in boxing. Now, that was maybe 15 years ago now at this stage. But, I mean, what's your take on the reaction to it, particularly in the Irish media?
Yeah, I think, you know, the papers, again, haven't done themselves any favours. You know, and you can understand to a certain extent, you know, what they're saying. You look at some of the headlines that I've seen. They're pretty much shitting on Conor McGregor again. You know, we've seen in the past, they hardly reported some of his wins, you know, against the likes of Chad Mendes and Jose Aldo. And it just seems to be always the negatives that they put in there and run with. And obviously this wasn't, you know, Conor's fault in what happened post-fight, not whatsoever from what we've seen anyway. So, you know, I just think, and I said this on with Tommy Martin on Saturday, it was an opportunity to promote the sport and put a light on some of the other fighters on the card. You know, why isn't there any mention of Tony Ferguson in the newspapers against Anthony Pettis? A phenomenal fight. You know, it's very frustrating when you have to read things like this. And, you know, it's just, again, they really haven't done themselves any favours in terms of their coverage. And you can sort of understand it, obviously, by the way it fell out. But again, it's just incredibly frustrating because I know the questions I'm going to have to answer for the next, you know, 6 months in terms of, oh, thuggery, barbaric behaviour. You know, there's been very few isolated incidents of this in mixed martial arts. And it's just unfortunate, again, that it's happened on the biggest stage. But I just think there should be wider coverage in the newspapers of this sport in this country. And as I said that to Tommy Martin on Saturday. And, you know, that's the real gripe for me, that we could be looking at this fight as a real, real success. You know, win, lose or draw for Conor McGregor. Habib put in a fantastic performance and people could be talking about him now as, you know, the dominant, the greatest lightweight, the greatest fighter of all time, pound for pound rankings after that victory. But we're not. We're talking about an absolute idiotic act that has put a dark shadow on the sport of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, I think you're dead right. Just one other thing I want to say, like, I'm really looking forward to a Khabib Tyron Woodley fight at some stage down the line. I think that's going to be a super fight between two very strong individuals who have credentials now to create a very big super fight.
Yeah, really good points. You know, it's obviously Khabib's, you know, it's a big, big weight cut from to 155. Tyron Woodley, a guy who's a big, big 170er, a great champion, probably one of the best pound for pound, if not the best pound for pound fighter in the world at the moment. Against a guy who I probably would have said is the best pound for pound fighter in the world if we hadn't seen the actions we saw. So yeah, listen, that's a fight I'd definitely like to see down the line. I think we're a long, long way away from it yet. I think there's other fights for Khabib to make. You know, you look at probably someone who hasn't been talked about so much as Kevin Lee as well, a guy who's a fantastic wrestler and a really, really good striker who would definitely give Khabib Nurmagomedov a good run for his money. And I think that's another fight down the line they can make. And you've obviously that Tony Ferguson fight, you've the McGregor rematch. There's plenty of options for the UFC to make here. But, you know, in terms of whether it was a good night for the UFC or a bad night, I'm not so sure. It depends on the outcome of this Nevada State Athletic Commission inquest. And, you know, whether if they're going to suspend Khabib for a long period of time. Dana said he's going to strip him. It's going to be interesting to see if Dana sticks to that word, because we know Dana's gone back on his word many, many a time. And I think that is a fascinating aspect and element before we can actually even maybe talk about fights for Conor McGregor or indeed Tony Ferguson or Khabib Nurmagomedov, because a lot needs to be resolved outside of the octagon. And it's very, very frustrating, again, that we have to go through this process and wait for legal matters to be resolved before we can start talking about actually a fight being put together. So very frustrating altogether.
Okay, I think we'll park UFC 229 there for the time being until we find out the full ramifications of the post-fight stuff. You have some news about Rhys McKee?
Yeah, Rhys McKee has signed for Cage Warriors Fighting Championships today. He actually announced the news on the Eurobash podcast with PT Carroll there in MMA Fighting last night, but Cage Warriors confirmed the news today. Really, really good signing from, you know, in my eyes, Europe's top promotion. Really good platform for Rhys. Obviously, Rhys has said to me in the past that he doesn't want to go down the Bellator line. And I think that's where you go if you don't want to go down the Bellator line. Obviously, with Bellator, you know, having taken half the fighters here in Europe that were contracted to Bama, Reese has opted to go for cage warriors, and that's very much the UFC route. And he reiterated that to Peter Carroll, that it is the UFC route that he wants to go. And kudos to Reese. He could have gone for the easy option and probably more money, you know, being signing for Bellator. And, you know, brave move from Reese, but a guy who's, you know, so dedicated and so committed to his cause. And a guy, as I talked about, you know, putting the spotlight on fighters in this country, Reese is one of those guys that we should have very much have the spotlight on, because he's a top up-and-coming prospect in this country. And, you know, I'm really excited to see what's in the future for Reese, because he's a guy who's gone places in his age as well. You know, he's a Bama World Champion, a Lonsdale Champion. And, you know, things are only going to get better for him at 22 years of age. It's an incredible story.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Listen, hopefully we'll have Reese in the studio in the next couple of weeks as well. He's on for coming up and having a chat with us, so looking forward to that.
Ah, super, yeah.
Listen, and Artem as well, I think we have to mention, sorry for interrupting you twice in a row there, Simon, but I think, as I said there, Artem Lobov's fight looks off next week, which is a real, real shame. I have to feel sorry for Artem. Second time in a row after unsavoury incidents that Artem's fight has been totally pulled from the card. And just unfortunate for Artem that he's not going to get to throw down in there. And it's a real shame and a real black day for the sport worldwide.
Yeah, like, Artem's obviously in fighting form. Has there any been any talk of a replacement?
Not that I've heard of at the moment. Artem, I briefly spoke to him at the weigh-in last Friday. Him, Coach Roddy and Dylan Danis came in when Conor weighed in. Literally just shook his hand, said, "What's the crack? Hope you're looking forward to next week." And obviously he couldn't foresee what happened on Saturday night. So Dana White has said those three fighters will never fight in the UFC again. And according to John Morgan, it was Tugahov, and subsequently Dana White said the fight has been pulled. So it's a real, real shame for Artem. But hopefully, listen, you never know. Maybe this replacement lined up. Maybe it's too short for Artem. But maybe you'll sit out for a couple of weeks and maybe even get on the New York card in a few weeks' time.
Listen, Niall, good to have you back. I'm looking forward to having you back in the studio next week.
Yeah, 100%. Looking forward to get back in the studio. And, you know, lots coming in the coming weeks as well. And there's actually been rumours. One more thing, there's so much happening this week on jet. Like, Darren Till apparently is going to announce that he is moving to 185 pounds this week. So I'm actually glad to hear that. That's speculation. I think it's going to be confirmed today, as far as I'm aware. Going to be interesting to see that news, and hopefully we'll hear from Darren in the next few weeks as well.